Here are the stories we're covering this week in Category5.tv Newsroom. Samsung has clarified what was causing Note 7s to catch fire. A dad found a really creative use for 360 video, giving his daughter a first-person virtual reality view of her dollhouse. The Star Trek film Axanar has settled out of court with CBS and Paramount. A robot can write news articles in just 1 second. And car makers are using soy-based products under the hood, and it's causing all kinds of issues as rodents find it delicious. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new, beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? You need hosting. One of the things about a hosting account is you don't want to have limitations put on your website.
It's true.
How much hard drive space do you have? How many email accounts? How many domains can point to it? Well, we've got an amazing deal for you. For a very limited time, cat5.tv/dreamhost. For just $5 and a bit of change per month, you are going to get unlimited website hosting, unlimited email accounts on that hosting service. You are also going to receive a free domain name.
Ooh.
So your own .com.
Nice.
To put that amazing website that you've been working on
it's
on
true.
There. If you want to build a WordPress site, fine. Sign up. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
Just don't put Panama Papers on it.
Just don't do it. But hey, it's a great deal, folks. Best deal you're going to find. $5 and change per month. Go to cat5.tv/dreamhost.
I'm Sasha Dermatis, and here are the top stories for the week of February 1st, 2017. During a press conference Sunday, Samsung said two separate battery defects caused both the original batch of Galaxy 7 Notes and the replacement units to overheat. The first battery, it said, suffered from a design flaw. The battery's external casing was too small for the components inside, causing it to short circuit and ignite. The second battery, which came from another supplier, didn't have the same flaw. Rather, in the rush to pump out enough batteries for the replacement units, the supplier introduced a manufacturing defect that led to the same result. The explanation puts to rest the mystery behind the exploding Note 7, but it kicks off a new challenge for the embattled company, winning back your trust after disastrous several months that included two recalls and the decision to kill the critically acclaimed phone. The Sunday press conference marked the start of a Samsung campaign to rebuild company credibility, which will include the upcoming launch of the flagship Galaxy S8 phones, as well as another Note later in the year. Having not one but two batteries from different suppliers fail for different reasons is a bizarre coincidence that may surprise and frustrate some who were looking for a single clean explanation. Three independent testing firms reached the same conclusion as Samsung, that it was the battery and not the phone's design or Samsung's manufacturing process that caused the Note 7 battery issues. The problem I have with this news story is, absolutely, they completely clearly said the first battery, it was just the casing was too small for the actual internal components, overheat, bam, explosion. Second battery, just a flaw. Like, they don't actually say what the flaw is. Just a flaw.
Keen observation.
Yeah. Like, we want to tell you some of the truth, but we don't want to tell you that exactly the same thing happened twice.
With two different manufacturers.
Yeah. Like, exactly the same. We want all this power in this small little thing. Do it. And then they did the same thing twice.
I do sometimes wonder with these kinds of flaws, and this is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
But I sometimes wonder if just the pressure on companies to release stuff is all it takes to cause this kind of catastrophe.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's a consumerist idea that you need to buy a new phone so often.
Well, sure. Well, that's
right?
The consumer.
So,
end, right?
Because we are wanting bigger and better and prettier and stronger. I don't even know. Like, we just want a really great phone all of the time. Like, the cutting edge. Oh, I'm bored with my 6-month-old phone. I want a new phone.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to that. But I look at the manufacturer's perspective and think, are they pushing too hard to be competitive? And I think Yeah, but what's weird?
It's working. I really wanted one of these.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Really wanted.
Not so much now.
Now, no. Now I'm happy.
But you notice how Samsung puts it all on the battery manufacturer? Now, I'm not saying that it is Samsung's fault. I'm not making any claims or conspiracy theories here. But we got to take some onus for our own.
Right. Okay. So
take some responsibility for what we do.
If a car manufacturer, right?
Yeah.
If they buy parts from another company and put them in their car, is it the other company's fault if something goes wrong? Right?
Well,
no. I think that it's the actual car company that is.
I think at least the car company should take ownership for that.
Right. So maybe Samsung.
It just feels like one of those big box superstores. Oh, we didn't know that we were manufacturing jeans at a sweatshop, so we'll stop dealing with that sweatshop and make them somewhere else.
Yeah.
So now that big box manufacturer, not to name any names, but you know who I'm talking about, doesn't have to take any responsibility for them basically funding those kinds of operations.
There's something that sits wrong with this, and I love Samsung.
Like, I'm not GWG.
I'm trying not to badmouth Samsung because I really love their products.
Yeah.
But it feels like half of an explanation, which also leads to kind of half an apology. You know? I just don't love it. Anyway. Because the technology is so new to mainstream users, the benefits of virtual reality are still being discovered. But we're increasingly finding that VR can bring families together in new ways. The latest example comes from an HTC Vive user who decided to give his daughter a tour of her dollhouse in a new way that's never been possible before. Using a Rheos Theta SC 360-degree camera, Toby Newman captured all the rooms in his daughter's dollhouse and then gave her the unique opportunity to stroll around alongside her dolls inside the tiny structure. Newman also posted a series of 360 photos to give everyone an idea of what his daughter can see when looking through the VR headset. And while the setup is an amazingly clever use of VR technology, parents thinking of duplicating the effort should be aware that the age restrictions around VR headset use. Although the HTC Vive doesn't list a specific age limit, its site does state that the product was not designed to be used by children.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the Oculus Rift advises that this product should not be used by children under the age of 13, and the PlayStation VR suggests that the VR headset should be used by those age 12 and up. So, yeah, it is.
This dad came up with an incredible idea.
Yes.
And way to go, Dad. I mean, I'm always looking for ways to do something fun with the kids. Right now it's stop motion videography, and they're just loving it. This dad did something great, and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, you're not supposed to. You know, this is the news.
Right, but what's the reason behind it? Why aren't you supposed to?
I think it has to do with, and I'm not a medical professional at all by any means, but doesn't it have to do something with still developing your kind of visual cortex and frontal lobe and all that stuff? Like, it's has to do with affecting development if
Except
you use VR.
She's not going to live in her dollhouse. She's going to take a random little stroll in it now and again.
And
you know?
It's super cool.
It's so cool. Don't stop doing what you're doing. That's a cool dad. I love
it. Definitely.
I honestly think that maybe it's one of those, like, you can't swim for 30 minutes after you eat, which is really just a lie. You might just be
I swim while eating.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Caribbean?
And listening to music. with your new
Yes, exactly.
Speaker.
Underwater.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome news story for today. Over a year after Star Trek's copyright holders engaged in a legal war with the sci-fi series' own fans over a crowdfunded unofficial prequel film, the two sides in the infringement lawsuit announced Friday that their battle will not head to a courtroom after agreeing upon a settlement.
Oh.
A settlement
Sasha,
has been reached.
Well, that's good. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But Axanar can't happen.
Maybe it will happen.
The settlement involves shutting her down.
Hmm.
Right? So not awesome in that regards.
I wonder if it's a... I wonder if it'll lead them into a new direction, though. Like,
who?
Know.
Axanar?
Yeah.
Well, will they take the route of Star Trek Renegades and just become Renegades, drop Star Trek from the name, and change their uniform so that the communicator pin's on this side, and like it just
obviously
just doesn't work.
They know
it's
how
Star
loved.
Trek.
Yeah, obviously they
fan film.
Know how loved they are. Axeter knows. They got this.
I know.
So whatever they choose to do from this point, they have the full support
yeah.
of everyone.
But it's still,
for,
it's
like,
a shame.
You know.
It's a big shame.
In December 2015, Paramount Pictures and CBS Studios filed a copyright infringement lawsuit against producer Alec Peters over his planned film Axanar and its prequel Prelude to Axanar, which they claimed used innumerable copyright elements of Star Trek, including its settings, characters, species, and themes. However, the end of the year-long legal battle ended Friday with a joint statement via The Hollywood Reporter, Paramount Pictures Corporation, CBS Studios, Inc., and Axanar Productions, Inc. Oh, and Alec Peters are pleased to announce that the litigation regarding Axanar's film Prelude to Axanar and its proposed film Axanar has been resolved. Axanar and Mr. Peters acknowledge that both films were not approved by Paramount or CBS, and that both works crossed boundaries acceptable to CBS and Paramount relating to copyright law. It's unclear if Peters had to compensate CBS and Paramount over Axanar. If the lawsuit had gone to trial, Peters faced damages ranging anywhere from $1.4 million, the amount of his grassroots campaign which raised and produced the film, to upwards of $100 million or $150,000 for every setting, every character, theme, or piece of wardrobe that a jury found violated Star Trek's copyrights.
Ouch.
Okay, there is something to say. You can't just take, like, it's, you can't just do it without saying first. But, right, this is sold to you by somebody who asked first.
Yeah.
Right? Like, somebody can't just walk around and be like, hey, that's Sasha. She's a cool girl. I'm just going to, like, be her and impersonate me and do different things.
Oh,
you can't
sorry, just, guys. You're going to have to stop doing that.
You can't just, like, you know, like, I can't just be like, I really like this show. What's a really good show? Like, Game of Thrones. I can't just, like, take all of the characters from Game of Thrones and make a new show based on that idea.
Let's just think about the term fair use. Here on Category 5 Technology TV, we're wearing Starfleet uniforms in honor of Star Trek. We're excited about the upcoming show. We're excited about the Bluetooth communicator that they've brought out. It's officially licensed product. We're not benefiting from it directly.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a campaign that you've raised over $1 million in order to fund this project, now, rather than just being a couple of folks dressed up in Starfleet uniforms having a fun time,
right?
You're a professional operation. You're making a feature film at that point.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, there is no gray area there. It's simply you are doing a commercial production. You've got millions of dollars to do it with. You know, that's tough.
I wonder if things would have gone differently if there was just like a little heads up about this.
If there was no Star Trek Discovery coming out in a couple of months, then I think some of these things might have slipped through. You think about Star Trek Renegades, the first episode, it happened. But then after Discovery was announced, they shut it down. They brought out the new rules about fan films, and they literally shut down any professional fan films.
Yeah, but, I mean, clearly there's a huge fan base behind this guy and behind this new company.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe just go in a different direction. Do something different.
Put the nacelles on the side.
Right?
It's a tough thing. Yeah. We'll watch it and we'll see what they come up with. But
exactly. Now, Peters initially argued that Axanar was created under fair use production of copyrighted materials.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. However, the judge overseeing the case struck down the fair use argument in a January summary judgment ruling, steering the way towards Friday's settlement. As part of their settlement, Peters agreed to make substantial changes to Axanar to resolve this litigation.
Oh, they are?
Maybe they're just changing it up. Peters also promised in the future to adhere to the fan film guidelines that CBS and Paramount created in June 2016 after Trekkies expressed their dismay concerning the litigation against Axanar and the effort to squash fan films. So, it'll still come out. Just everything will be different. Completely different.
It sounds like they're pulling a Renegades.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it comes out.
Oh, good luck to you. Okay. Newspaper reporters, beware of Zhao Nan, the first Chinese robot journalist who wrote an article in just a second.
Wow.
How long does it take you to write the news?
These news stories? Yeah, yeah. A few hours.
Yeah. More than just a second, right?
Yeah.
Maybe get a Zhao Nan.
I need one.
Yeah.
Let's get him in.
I'll read it. Whatever. For the first time, a robot journalist named Zhao Nan made its debut in a Chinese daily newspaper on Thursday. The robot wrote a 300-word article in just a second. The article by the robot was published in China and was about the travel rush during the Chinese New Year's, also known as the Spring Festival. Nan's lead developer said when compared with staff reporters, Zhao Nan had a stronger data analysis capacity and is quicker at writing stories. The staff of the state-run media outlet were rather uneasy with the experiment as they feared that they ran the risk of losing their jobs to the robots. This experiment proved that presently robots are still unable to carry out face-to-face interviews as they can't map spontaneous reactions nor come up with follow-up questions. Also, they are not intelligent enough to choose a significant news angle based on a conversation or interview like humans are. But he claims robots will be able to act as a supplement, helping newspapers and related media as well as editors and reporters. See?
Okay.
It's an enhancement tool.
Sure. Well,
I feel like I'm arguing with Invisible Jeff, anti-robot Jeff.
You're going to have to argue with yourself because Jeff's not here tonight.
Okay, so what Jeff would say is, see, just another thing where robots are taking over humanity. But I'm saying that this robot is a friendly robot. It's going to write 80% of the story, and it just needs your human influence to just, like, angle it in a great way.
Sure. Could it be, like, akin to spell check on your word processor and grammar check is taking it one step further, but now using AI to say, no, let's word it like this.
Right.
So
like, can you imagine the journalists, they're going to be able to come up with the bulk of the story so quick and then just
so they can take care of the human factor, give it to the robot and let it do the writing.
I guess in some ways, some jobs will get cut because now maybe 3 reporters can do the job that 15 reporters could do before.
Or if it's so incredibly accurate, do you need the same number of editors? Do you need proofreaders?
Right. I mean, it can't do face-to-face interviews, so it's not stealing anybody's job yet.
At least not the interviewers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In the cold winter months, it's not unusual for rodents to sneak their way into car engines to warm themselves up. But an eco-friendly, soy-based insulation being used by automakers may be tempting these critters too much. One vehicle owner had rodents chew out the wiring in his Honda CR-V, causing hundreds of dollars in damage. They had nibbled through the insulation and exposed the bare wires, which caused them to short-circuit, causing things to go haywire. Mechanic Max Chang believes the issue is becoming even more common as automakers like Honda, Toyota, and Subaru turn to soy-based insulation. He says they love it. It's delicious for them. I'm vegetarian. I really like soy-based products myself.
Well, you know, you just get under the hood of your car and there's some delicious eats down there.
Now I know if I'm ever like hankering for a little soy-based product.
Well, you know, the roads get pretty rough. If you ever need to like pull over and it's too cold out and the engine won't start, you can eat the engine.
Well, you know those survival kits where you can like light a candle or you can eat it? Like it's an edible kit. Have you not seen that?
I haven't seen it, but I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so right up there with edible engine
parts,
components.
Car won't start, eat it. Some car owners are fighting back, launching 2 class action lawsuits against Toyota and Honda in the U.S. Brian Kavitek, the attorney representing a Toyota Tundra owner, said, "You don't make the wires out of something that's edible. Maybe you don't, maybe you do." The suits claim the automakers are aware of the product but have refused to cover repairs under warranty. The plaintiffs claim it's a defect and should be covered. Okay, so as a car owner, now I'm taking myself away from like the love of delicious soy-based products. But
as a vegetarian car owner.
As a vegetarian car. I don't want my car to get eaten by anybody else or anything else. Mm. Or even me.
Like it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, did you not see this coming? Like, you do not leave open candy and chocolate bars when you know there's mice.
Yeah, you know animals are going to get into your car. You know that cats and kittens die all of the time when they go into the wheel well because they want to be really close to the really warm, nice engine. Yeah. They do that because they're animals and they are just... They're seeking pleasure. They're seeking heat. They're seeking food and shelter. You have provided all of those things when you have like a warm soy-based product to like nestle into.
Could the car manufacturers start making it distasteful? Like I know when I put foam to seal up holes around the house, I actually specifically buy one that is it's meant to taste disgusting to rodents. So that if they do start chewing on the foam, they're not going to like it. Agamotto thinks, well, you know, as a car owner, you could sprinkle something like cayenne pepper into your engine. Well, couldn't the manufacturers actually make that part of the mix?
Make it part of the thing.
If they're going to do this, because it's biodegradable and it's smart for the environment, but couldn't they make it a little less appetizing?
What are you doing making your car so delicious? Yeah. What are you doing?
It's like a salad on wheels.
That's right. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Dermatis.